So yeah, basically, I came here as a result of a story that was picked up on firehouse.com about some trainings that John Udis and I had done with dairy and fire and dairy in Salem first responders. And, you know, just basically addiction basics and giving my perspective as somebody who has been revived by Narcan multiple times. Basically, my experience was added where I am now in recovery. And so, I came here and gave the presentation. And it turned out that there was two folks here who had been at one of my overdoses. And, that's more or less the story. I mean, you know, I didn't really process it all the way, like, that day. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, you know, that's cool. Like, nice to meet you. Thank you. And then, like, kind of later on, it was like, wow, it's pretty powerful, you know?
Was that the turning point?
That overdose was my last one, yeah. It was my first one that required Narcan first responders, and that was the one that was a turning point for me. That and another couple different series of unfortunate events. But yeah, I was in treatment less than a week later. I've been sober ever since.
I didn't make the connection until when you came in for the training and you started talking about specifics, and you had mentioned that you had been placed through a temp agency up in Northampton, and then the alarms went going off in my head. I knew I was on the call. I didn't realize that I was actually the primary care provider that day. So typically we went mutual aid, so we went over there with three of us. Craig and I were in the back of the ambulance. Northampton had at least one person on scene prior to, I think it came in as being on responsive sound from what I remember. By the time we got there, Ryan was conscious, alert, oriented, but combative, and just kind of like, but was able to communicate his story to us. Hey, you know, was part of a temp agency placed here. I went on my lunch break and injected. And the only reason I remember is I reviewed the report. I think you were saying like 0.1 grams you injected in the bathroom during that. And this was the first time. So this was what, 2014? I think it said December. It was the first time I can remember Craig and I having the conversation in the back. Well, do we even need to give Narcan at this point? Because this guy's alert-oriented, his respiratory rate is solid, all his vitals are within acceptable ranges. And the best thing for him was just to be compassionate and kind of let him do his thing and not aggravate him. That medical treatment wasn't necessarily what he needed. What he needed, somebody to just kind of be there for him and ensure to him that things were going to be all right, and that he needed to work through things on his own. So I do remember communicating to the hospital specifically, saying, hey, we withheld Narcan, this is the reason why, and they were on board with that and said everything was fine. As far as the treatment, I don't know if you want to fill in what your experience was at the hospital after that, because that was one of the things when you came in for the class that was kind of enlightening to me and made me understand things from your perspective, and was really one of the coolest pieces to this was you describing what it was like, what it's like to have Narcan administered in that state. And that's something that I don't think any of us had ever given any perspective to. I don't know if you remember the call any differently either, correct? But
I remember the call the same way, you know, conscious, alert, oriented, agitated. Sure that you see us as somebody like you're gonna blow up my eye, but you know our number one concern is your safety.
Yeah.
What does that drug do? It stops you from breathing.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're conscious, you're alert, you're breathing, you're answering questions. We had just like Jed said, we had that quick conversation of do we really need to give this? But we took all the appropriate steps: vitals, IV, oxygen ready if needed, BBM if needed, just in case you were to go down that road. So it was going to be the fastest route from the IV, and we were ready, but remained alert and oriented the whole time. So yeah, that's our main focus, to make sure that you're safe.
Yeah. So my recollection of this is nothing. At this point in time, we're talking about the first one. I remember some lady banging on my window. And that's almost, I was under the impression I was Clark Kent at that point, but I was brought to Exeter Hospital, at which time they administered naloxone, and they called several people in to kind of watch my reaction. And as I went into a precipitated withdrawal, and they really just kind of gave me a blanket and said to tough it out, and I was out of there within an hour in precipitated withdrawal, which is pretty extreme. And yeah, that was a really awful experience. It's basically like a panic attack that physically hurts. You know, it's disorienting. It's kind of like being hot and cold at the same time. I kind of described this feeling like the top layer of your skin is missing. It's just really super unpleasant. And then I went on my way and did what seemed like the only thing to do, which was to go and use to make myself feel better. Later that night, I was pulled over for driving under the influence, and that was just, I kind of just broke down at that point, because 8 hours later, I had been revived from an overdose and found unresponsive, and I just, you know, kind of gave up, and at that point, I decided I needed to go back to residential treatment. Up until this point in time, like I said, I thought that they had administered Narcan at the scene. Mm-hmm. It's a very, you know, it's a very intoxicating drug. The whole thing is very disorienting. It doesn't really leave much room for the short-term or long-term memory.
It's cool to see it full circle. Our sole main focus is to make sure that you're good, but it's good for you to come back to us, especially as a counselor now, to know everything that's happened, and then now teach us and train us as far as the patient, what it's like, what we do, and then over the course of how to recover, especially so that we can then tell other people who are, you know, affected by this, that, you know, there's treatment, there's help out there. It's not just here, it's out there. And there's a support system. So.
I think Ryan deserves the bulk of the credit in this circumstance, because it takes, from my perspective, we're here to do a job. We train on our job, we practice it to a point of perfection, and we're going to treat everybody the same way, regardless of where we respond and what the circumstance is. But for somebody in his shoes that dealt with the demons, is that a fair way to say it? That he had to work through on his own, and to have the courage to come back in here, and now he's helping people in his same circumstance hopefully get to the point where he's at, but for him to walk back in here and share his story openly and allow us in to see, because we drop people off at the hospital, and very rarely do we even get feedback on what is to happen to them afterwards. And for him to come full circle and share over the last 4 years plus three and change what he's been doing with himself, and it's a very rewarding experience, but we owe that feeling of reward to him for being able to come in here and share his story so honestly with everybody. And I think, I don't know what your thoughts are in the circumstance, but from my perspective, I thank you for being willing to be there.
My story is common, kind of in my sphere. A lot of people I know who are in long-term recovery, short-term recovery, their journey to recovery was started by being revived by Narcan. When I go to certain 12-step meetings, I'd say the majority of the room has been revived. I'm in a situation because of my career path where I'm given the opportunity to share my story. It's ultimately a really personal thing. And there, when we start to do these trainings, we were trying to pull people. Not many people want to do it. It's not something that to be proud of, but, you know, on the other side of it, I see, you know, the value in telling you folks that we do get better. People who are experiencing addiction are generally on a natural path to recovery. It just takes some support and some intervention, you know. But ultimately, we do recover. It's just, you know, even the media, I know it's a lot of, you know, crime, overdose, death. You guys kind of see a snapshot of crime, overdose, death, and kind of the pathology of it. but that's just such a small part of someone's life.
Not everybody does is able to complete that circle like you did, though. Not everybody does fully recover, so that takes hard work and dedication on your behalf to get to that point. But then, like you said, a lot of people don't want to openly share their story because you're asking somebody to go into their past and the deepest, darkest secrets of their past and openly share that with people. And the majority of people, whether or not that's their past or not, don't want to let you into their closet and share the, you know, those secrets with them. So, again, I think it's the bulk of this is on you for where you're at now and the courage to come back in you.
And it's a success story, because I know one call specifically with somebody completely different, suffering from an opioid abuse situation, that their outcome is nowhere near like this.
Yeah.
So, and ultimately, it didn't pan out. Yeah. So, but for this to come back, it only reinvigorates us to know that we are making a difference, that we can help.
Well, hopefully this helps get that story out there, and you can just continue to share around the whole Seacoast, because I think it validates some of the work that we do when somebody like you comes back in and it's just like, I was able to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think what's important is the people involved in the story and getting them the resources that they need, and whether that takes one time or three times, whatever their specific circumstances, we get them to where they need to be and make sure they're safe and provided for at that point in time.
Yeah, we got in the business just to save people, just to help people, no matter what, whether it's even just to help somebody get back into a house, you know, from their car, because they're a little bit physically unable to, all of a sudden to, you know, somebody needs to be involved. So whatever it takes.
The training specifically was myself and John Eudis, who I think one point you were in contact with. He's a master's level clinician. He's a licensed drug and alcohol counselor and social worker. And he, I think it starts out, and I kind of give my perspective as a person in recovery who's been revived by naloxone multiple times, and what I do now with my life working at Safe Harbor Recovery Center, and just a really short, you know, my recovery started with an overdose. I explain, you know, the feeling of being Narcan, like I explained, and then explain what I do now. And then John kind of supplements that with more of a clinical perspective, and he kind of gets into more or less a training on what is addiction, what are the causes of addiction, and it really just becomes an opportunity for first responders to ask questions. And this group in particular had a lot of really good questions. I was fortunate enough to have a mother and stepfather who had long-term recovery from alcoholism, so they really get it. And they said, you know, if you turn over the keys to your vehicle, your phone, and your money, you can sit here and detox and get yourself into treatment. This was my fourth attempt at residential treatment, so I kind of knew the numbers to call at this point. You know, access to a computer and a phone, and I sat there on the landline at my folks' house and got myself in. You know, I was really dedicated. I made the phone screenings, and I was admitted to the Phoenix House on December 23rd, right before Christmas and New Year's. And I think the intervention was the 17th. So from intervention to treatment, it was about 6 days, and that was kind of a lot of hard work on my end. You know what's kind of cool about that is helping people navigate that is kind of a large majority of what I do for work now. People who are experiencing issues with drugs or alcohol are kind of on a natural path to recovery. It's more about supporting and making them feel a part of society and making them feel connected and giving them a reason to stop using or drinking. A lot more than it is, you know, tough love, lock them up, kick them out of the house type situation. You know, in my experience and experience of a lot of people I know, it really came down to the people that I had left in my corner who could love and support me to a point where I, you know, it was worth not doing drugs anymore. Recovery isn't always linear. You know, relapse is part of my story, and that's, you know, it's a chronic health condition. I don't like to call it a disease, but it's, you know, a chronic brain disorder and a chronic ailment, if you will, as relapses, whether it's asthma or diabetes or a substance use disorder.
With this success story or this recovery story, that my role as a provider is not just so much about treatment and resuscitation. It's about being that bridge to get somebody to talk to, that there's help, and that this is the pathway, this is the bridge to help them on the road to recovery.
I hope that there's one person out there that might be in the situation Ryan was a few years ago, and this story maybe prompts them to reach out and gets them in touch with him, and that maybe one other person can be saved from that. And I think Ryan has the tools to be able to help somebody with that. So if we can help one other person get to where he's at, it's all worth it.